Welcome to From the Booth, a podcast where we talk about the films playing at BYU's International Cinema. My name is Brad Barber, co-director of International Cinema, and today in the booth we'll be discussing the film from our Fathers and Sons theme, Finnish Blood, Swedish Heart, directed by Mika Ronkainen. In this documentary musical drama hybrid, a father-son road trip becomes an emotional journey into family identity and the broader story of Finnish immigration into Sweden. This movie is about fathers and sons, the main character, Kai, his dad, a little bit about his dad's dad, and a little bit about Kai's five-year-old son, too. So, my guest today, I'm very excited about. This is a very unique situation here. My guest today was born in Southern California, but mostly raised right here in Provo, Utah. But now he's back in Southern California, where he is a student at Pomona College. He's a cinephile, he's a philosopher, he's a seeker, he's an actor, he's a humorist, and he's also my son. I'm very proud of him. It's my great honor to introduce Mr. Andrew Barber.
Hey, Ira. How you doing? It's an honor to be here. I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller. It's great to be in the booth.
Did you call me Ira?
Yeah, is this not This American Life? Wait.
Thanks for being here, Andrew. How does it feel to be doing this, podcast with your dad?
It feels good. It's nice. I think that it's fun. I've done a podcast, but it was a lot less professional than this. Isn't a dig at all.
Whoa. Let's temper those expectations. The word professional could be used in quotes here.
Okay. I think that nepotism has done us a great favor today. I think that our dynamic is amazing on and off mic. And I'm kind of like the Sonam Obsession to your
on and off mic.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm kind of the Sonam Obsession to your Conan O'Brien. You know what I'm saying? We just have this banter going that could.
I would have thought those roles were reversed.
You think so?
I feel like more the Sonam in this situation.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I guess you could be right.
Have you? So you said you've already been on a podcast before. Is that right?
I ranked
multiple podcasts.
I ranked every Batman movie.
On the podcast?
On the podcast, yeah.
Do you want to plug that podcast?
I don't know if it's in circulation anymore. I think we're just going to, it's fine.
What do you think this experience is going to be like today?
I think it's going to be fun. I think that if we can utilize the conversations, we do drive a lot together. And I think that we do have conversations similar to this on those drives where we kind of both, do this like fun back and forth and also like kind of get into it, whether that be about art or about life or about our relationship or about our history. So I think that this will hopefully translate over to a podcast space.
Well, yeah, you and I have participated in the great American tradition of a road trip. Mm-hmm. And actually you and I have been on a handful of just you and me road trips. Mm-hmm. One of them I'll ask you about in just a few minutes, but you're right. Most of our time clocked in the car is a little bit, less mileage or less time. Mm-hmm. But there's something that happens in a car together with fathers and sons, maybe, right? You talk about things maybe you don't normally have time to talk about.
Yeah.
Think about things you haven't thought about together. Talk about ideas. A lot of that happens in this film. Now, could this podcast be charged with nepotism, as you said? Maybe. But I like to remember that when we attended the BYU library screening of It's a Wonderful Life many years ago, mm-hmm. I think you were 6 years old.
Yes.
This is one of the treasures of BYU's special collections. We have a personal copy, rather Jimmy Stewart's personal 35mm print mm-hmm. of the treasured film. And we were in line for at least an hour, queuing up to get in. I think there was kind of a, first come, first serve situation going on. And they had a strict rule that you had to be at least 8 years old to attend. But I felt very confident in bringing you, even though you were only six, because I felt like, and I still feel pretty confident in saying this, that you probably had seen more black and white films than anyone in that audience at the age of six. And we won't say whether or not the old custodian of the special collections screening series let you in or not. That's a new conversation for another time. But you certainly deserve to be in there.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to say is, if you're listening to this, dear podcast listener, and you're maybe a BYU student, my guest today is a lot like you, except he's at Pomona College, of course, and he's also probably seen more movies than you. No offense. That's no knock on you, listener. I think he might have seen more movies than me.
You ever seen Trolls 2? You ever seen Trolls World Tour?
It's just a taste of the range of Andrew Barber. He's just joking about that. He really has seen a lot.
I've seen a few. He raised me on like Buster Keaton movies. Yeah.
Well, and I also asked Andrew here because, of course, he's my son, and this is a father-son movie. So that will come up organically sort of throughout our conversation. Mm. This film is a documentary road trip film. Road trip films are kind of their own, genre of films, and documentary or fictional. And yes, it features a father and son, but I also think it's a film about living between two countries or cultures, both with the main character, his name is Kai, and his father, who we were just talking about. I don't think they ever say what his father's name is, but we'll just say father, the dad. They both talk about their experience sort of living between Sweden and Finland and what that tension feels like and what that's been like. Do you agree with that characterization? Do you feel like this film is partially about living between two countries or cultures?
Yeah, I think the film is about both the struggle of inhabiting two countries and cultures, but also the greater level of nuance that being in that identity creates for someone. Hmm.
Do you ever feel like that, or did you ever feel like that since you were born in Los Angeles and you grew up in Provo, same country, but two pretty different cultures in a lot of ways? Did that resonate at all? Did you ever feel like that growing up here?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And maybe you could, just for the listener, you can say how old you were when you moved here to Provo.
Was I 4?
You were 2.5.
I was 2. See, I'm giving myself more years. Yeah.
You wished it was 4, probably.
I probably did, yeah. I've always thought of myself being here. I've always kind of self-defined as like more of a LA person. Before I left for school, which is in Los Angeles, I would tell my friends, I'd tell people I meet, I'd be like, I live here, but I was born in Glendale, and I was, even though I only spent 2 years there, I was like, well, I'm an Angeleno. First and foremost.
By
birthright, yes. Even though my experience with LA is largely just like shapes and colors and smells, Like, as when you're a baby, you're trying to figure out what reality is. It's like, oh, yeah. But I still have memories.
We went back and visited a lot.
So we maintained a connection to it, yes, for sure. And when I went back this year to LA, I found to college, yeah. I found a lot of the Provo parts of myself coming out more, which was interesting. Hmm. And I kind of really, despite not having the level of, I'd imagine that this relationship that the father and son have to Finnish and Swedish culture is a lot more complex than mine to California and Provo. But
yeah.
I feel an inherent level of contradiction within myself that also leads, I think, to a greater understanding of both cultures. Despite the ways that they kind of sometimes uncomfortably rub against each other.
Wow, can you think of an example? That's really interesting. Can you think of an example?
I think that being in Provo, I kind of missed the level of diversity that was in Los Angeles. I kind of missed the level of like culture and like the kind of melting pot of like everybody from all around the world is in this city and they're all trying to make it work. And because of that, you get this greater understanding of everyone and you get all these different beautiful experiences coming together. Whereas in Utah, I feel like it's kind of, a good culture, mostly the same kind of person that lives in Utah. Different experiences, like subjectively, but like largely speaking, the same like demographic. If that makes sense.
When you said Utah, I think you meant Provo specifically.
Provo specifically,
right?
Yeah.
Because there's other parts of Utah that are more diverse than Provo, but Provo has an unusual homogeny to it. Maybe. Mm-hmm. Am I getting you right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. What I found interesting about going to California and going to this school was that while I got that thing I missed of diversity and of this like greater city culture, people didn't really understand what Provo was in the same way. I don't think they had the kind of level of maybe nuance that you and I have regarding this city and the people that live in this city. That's not to say that they should or that they're any less for that, but just like, it's not something really people consider outside of like the larger stereotypes of Provo or of Utah. And so I was amazed that in a space that was so diverse, it was difficult for that to be really heard at all.
In California or in Southern California?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Am I understanding you right? You're saying that in a place as richly diverse as Southern California, you were surprised how little understanding there was about other places like Utah outside of Southern California?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Now, listener, you're probably noticing we're not talking a ton about Sweden and Finland. We're very cognizant of the fact that neither one of us have ever been there. We're not experts in the nuances of...
I've been to IKEA.
Of those two amazing countries, I will say this was fascinating for me to look at the tension between these two cultures, because I'm asking Andrew about, and Andrew's answering very eloquently about these differences that we notice on a more, what, familiar domestic level here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
There's real tension between those two countries, Finland and Sweden, in a way that I didn't fully understand. I have a friend that lived in Finland for a few years, and he came home and sort of jokingly grit his teeth and, you know, clench his fists and say, "Oh, the Swedes." And I knew he was just kidding, but also he told me, no, that's actually, there's this real thing that, surprised me. And, you know, I did a little bit of reading before the podcast about the history of that, but, you know, we'll maybe dip our toes into that just a little bit. But to get back to sort of our personal experiences that we are intimately familiar with, one of those road trips you and I took that I was alluding to before was when we filmed a documentary set in the American South, just you and me, a few years ago. We flew out there, but then we drove between states.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that the South, the American South, is where I grew up in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
But like you, I was born in California and moved when I was very young. I was 4 and a half. Maybe that's why you said 4 and a half, because I was 4 and a half when I moved from California.
Yeah.
And as a result, I mean, maybe there's other things at play there too, but I love Tennessee in ways I very much claim it now, but growing up, I just never quite felt like I belonged there.
Right.
You know what I mean? There did feel like there was a difference there. Did you, and I'm not trying to lead you to say the answer should be yes to this question, I'm just curious how you felt. Like, did you ever feel like that in Utah? I know your memories were maybe a little bit more abstract from California, like you were saying, but did you ever feel like a sense of, oh, I don't fully belong here like I belonged in California, or not so much, or something more, you know, complicated?
I think certainly something more complicated. I think that like growing up, especially, Provo was a city that I did like, and I found a lot of beauty in. But I the thought of me like living there for my entire life and being like, this is my home, didn't quite feel right. I have a lot of very good friends here, and there's a lot of like places I love here, and of course mountains and everything. But just looking at the city overall, I think I felt more drawn to Los Angeles. Maybe that could just be like the young person in me being like, oh, I got to go to the big city, I got to make it, you know, gotta dance. But I think that, yeah, Provo was more of the place I'm living now rather than the place I live, if that makes sense.
That's how you felt growing up here?
Yeah. And then leaving, being in LA and living that dream I'd had for so many years of being in this big city, I was interested to find that I did miss it. I missed Provo. Not like completely, like for the first several months I was fine, but then leading up to me returning this winter, I was like, oh wow, yeah, like I can't wait to go walk downtown, you know, and I can't wait to go see my friends, and I can't wait to do all of this. Can't wait to watch Pirates of the Great Salt Lake.
It's a deep cut.
Yep.
Not sure if our listeners will be familiar with that title, but please continue.
Google it. And so, yeah, I was interested to find myself maybe, well, not necessarily wanting to live in Provo, maybe having more sympathy for it after leaving, which was interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. And I think that's a common experience, you know. And for the listener also, we should maybe say that we're recording this in January and Andrew's home on a holiday break. This won't be coming out till March. But yeah, I think a lot of the listeners will probably identify with that feeling you're describing too, of going home for the first time, you know, after being away from home for the first time, and you kind of reassess something about your relationship from where you're with where you grew up when you have that little few weeks home for a holiday.
Mm-hmm.
That's really interesting. Toward the end of the film, our main character, Kai, after he's kicking penalty kicks at a soccer field with his friends, they're sort of comparing experiences, and he says, you can't forget where you came from. And that felt like a poignant moment, maybe a theme for the film being stated. Did you notice that moment? And do you think that statement is true? You can't forget where you came from?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that was one of my favorite lines in the film. And I remember seeing you taking notes on it and being glad you did because it really stood out to me. I think that growing up in Provo, despite wanting to go to LA, for the majority of my time in Provo, that when in LA, I found myself incorporating a lot of what I've learned from friends and family here into my experience there. I think that that's true for most of life, no matter where you end up. There's always going to be something in your past that remains a part of you that is, even though you maybe didn't like it while it was happening, or maybe you felt complicated about what was happening, is ultimately beneficial to you. So to say that I've had a lovely experience here in Provo, but I'm saying despite wanting to go to LA, I found Provo to be such a part of me in LA, which is fascinating.
Mm. Yeah, reminds me again of Kai's experience in this film. And I love that it was a documentary. You know, I think there were some really, there were moments that almost felt scripted because the dialogue between the father and son in the car was so poignant. Mm. And they're having, you know, I'll take the film at its face value or at its word that these are real moments that aren't being acted, where they're sort of having these breakthroughs in how they feel about this tension of their two, you know, national identities and how they were treated in Sweden, being, you know, from Finland, and vice versa. Maybe we should talk a little bit more about what can happen on road trips between fathers and sons. Mm. We alluded to this a little bit before, that there's things that you talk about that maybe you wouldn't talk about in other situations. That there's something about being stuck in a car together with no other place to go or other people to talk to for hours at a time, where you just end up inevitably talking about new things or deeper things. And I feel like we saw the relationship between Kai and his father change substantially just in the few days that this film is taking place. Mm-hmm. Do you have any thoughts about that, about generally the idea of what can happen on road trips? I mean, not to put too on the nose, but between fathers and sons, or if you can't think of something specific about fathers and sons, you could talk about road trips in general and how you might have seen. Do you agree that their relationship seemed to change?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think that especially the road trip enhances the theme of place in the film. And I think for us, that's been true as well. Doing those shoots near, close to your hometown was interesting because we can, you know, when you're on a road trip, you simultaneously find yourself talking, but also watching the world go by in a way, you know, journeying through places, which ultimately leads one to reflect on what place really means to you. Mm-hmm. And I remember you on these road trips telling me a lot of stories about growing up in your hometown and memories of like going to the pool or your student newspaper or things like that. And just like finding that to be quite similar to my experience of growing up in Provo, where simultaneously we both kind of feeling like we didn't belong, but also valuing the experience overall, I think. I think that in regards to just like the conversation, yeah, there's something really special about being able to just like have an excuse in this really busy world we live in to spend like hours on end with your father, with your son, and just be able to talk about really anything. And doing that while watching the world go by can be one of the great life experiences, for sure.
I love that we see this documentary play out as a road movie. This is a storytelling formula that will be familiar to a lot of people, where there's a beginning, a sort of a natural beginning, middle, and an end. Characters go on a trip on the road together. And there's this destination they're trying to get to physically, but inevitably there's some larger destination, if you will, that they're getting at. There's new understandings that they come to about the world, about each other, about themselves. They reflect on those things. And I think we see all that playing out in this documentary, similar to, you know, a scripted road movie, where the Kai and his dad do come to a greater understanding of what they've both been through as immigrants living between two cultures and countries. They talk a lot about their relationship and about the father's relationship with his father. And then Kai talks a little bit about his relationship with his own son. So I don't remember what question I was going to ask you about this. I guess I'm just observing how enjoyable this conversation is for me, because there's all these similar things, I think, for you and I, because we both, again, we both recognize on a super micro level, right, experienced a little bit of if not alienation, at least maybe a little bit of feeling of displacement.
Yes.
You know, being born in one place, raised in a different place.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, you and I both have this in common too, that we both moved back to California for school also. Yes. At some points. And we're a father and son, and we've taken road trips together.
Yeah.
And we're talking about,
yeah,
all of that.
Yeah.
I've been doing most of the question asking. Do you have any questions for me that we haven't talked about?
I am curious, because so much of your work in the documentary space as well focuses on people's relation to the places they live. And I'm curious if that level of displacement, whether micro or the same level as what's depicted in this film, can be found in any of the people you've interviewed for your series, States of America. Great series. You guys should watch it. If they felt maybe like they had to move to a place to find belonging, or if they already were in that place, or if the place they originally grew up in was somehow complicated.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we've done 42 out of the 50 states so far, and several of them have featured, I mean, literally, folks that were born in other countries and have made a life of it here. And I mean, I've definitely had that experience, hearing people describe those feelings of alienation or trying to fit in or trying to figure out what they needed from this new place to make it feel like home. And, you know, most of them ended up saying eventually it did feel like home. I always wonder if they think kind of that's what I want them to say, or that's what I'm hoping they'll say. I'm really happy to hear whatever their experience has been. I can only think of one or two where they've said they still don't really feel like they belong there. But so, you know, it's hard to say how they really feel sometimes. As much as we try as filmmakers, you know, I think there is a layer still of what people really think that they may or may not be willing to share in front of the camera, understandably. You know. Does that answer your question?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think that, yeah, the camera is a huge factor as well. Do you think that in the film, maybe that's also true? Because in the film, they seem to be very, like, uncertain rather than consistent about the exact place they choose to belong in.
Yeah, I guess there is a certain level of ambiguity in the film. I agree that it doesn't, to me, it didn't seem super clear that they felt 100% resolved, or, you know, that maybe they understood exactly how they fit in.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they felt a little bit more acceptance of the tension,
right,
of that conflict.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I definitely felt that they grew to a larger understanding of each other.
Yes.
And you were asking about how the camera might have influenced them. Yeah, that's a good question here too, especially because, as we mentioned in the introduction, it's also kind of a musical.
Oh, yes. We haven't talked about that at all. Yeah.
Yeah. They have all these cutaways. I don't know if that's the right word. There's pauses in the action where we see a band.
Right.
Maybe his band.
Yeah.
Performing.
They're jamming out.
In the countryside. I read about this afterwards. I hope I'm not misremembering it. I didn't write it down. But I want to say those were Finnish traditional songs specifically that, you know, probably carried more contextual meaning for, you know, a Finnish audience.
Right.
But yes, anyways, what I'm trying to say is that when suddenly there's a band in a field playing a song and addressing the camera directly, it felt, yeah, like the camera's presence is, you know, going to be part of the story. Maybe they sort of saw those guys as like a Greek chorus. What did you make of the band appearing every once in a while?
I mean, I think that this could maybe be a statement about the way that they choose to cope with this uncertainty and this contradiction of identity is through the creation of art, where a lot of these songs are about the struggle, and maybe even some hope in the struggle, but ultimately like a depiction of kind of the beauty of the hardship they're going through. And I think the film, similar to the songs, serves as an artistic expression as a way to cope with that level of contradiction, to synthesize that into an artistic medium and to express it to a larger audience.
I like that a lot. Yeah, we should have mentioned, if it wasn't clear, Kai is a musician.
Yes.
We see him playing at the beginning of the film and sort of talking about sing Finnish rock songs and Swedish rock songs. And yeah, that's a huge part of his identity. Mm. Yeah, I like that. That's really interesting. Well, thanks, Andrew. If there's no other questions or thoughts that either one of us have, maybe we'll close this conversation.
Yeah.
Do you want to have the final word? Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Don't forget to like. Don't forget to subscribe. You buy Professor Barber like a lot of the chocolate milk from the BYU store, the library store. Bring it to his doorstep.
Andrew, thank you for all your insights. Mm. We want to maybe one last time acknowledge that, you know, like a lot of films that we talk about in the film, we don't have direct experiences with the countries that are being portrayed. In this case, these cultures that are being addressed a lot throughout the documentary. But we've tried to sort of come at it through our personal experiences as a father and son that have taken road trips, that have talked about feelings of maybe a displacement between two different cultures, even if it's on a more micro scale. So listener, as you're hearing this, I hope that you'll think about experiences you've had that are similar to this. As you watch this beautiful film, you probably have had similar experiences as well with a family member, maybe with your community. This is the beautiful thing about all film. Thank you for listening today on From the Booth. We're grateful for the support of the BYU College of Humanities. You can check out our schedule, read about our films, and more at IC, International Cinema, ic.byu.edu. The opinions expressed in this podcast do not represent official views of the university or its supportive institutions. Work on the sound for this podcast is by Hayden Underwood, original music by Johnny Stallings. Thank you again, Andrew Barber. To our listeners, we hope to see you in room 250 of the Kimball Tower, and we'll talk again next time from the booth. Thank you.